All right, listen up. This is Hoxton on Audio Boom. Get your ears working, people.
Hello, and welcome to Double Tap, Audio Boom's official gaming podcast. I'm Alice Taplin, and this week I'm joined by streamer and Nerd React writer Jade Griffin. We delved into the world of Far Cry Primal, the prehistoric survival game that sees you leading your very own tribe as you battle with the elements, the animals, and other settlements.
This is how Far Cry does the Stone Age. You are Takar, a seasoned warrior of the Weenja tribe, known as the Beastmaster. To survive, you must embark on a savage adventure filled with brutal weapons, warring tribes, and mystical journeys. Takar and his people are at the very bottom of the food chain, threatened by man and beast alike. To overcome his many foes, Takar has powerful weaponry.
The story was probably the thing I knocked it most for in my review, just because I'm used to Far Cry having such an intricate narrative where they really make you feel emotions, you know, with Far Cry 3 where they kill your friends and things like that. This one is kind of like, hey, we're here. Go find these people for your village. Bring them back here. And then you talk to each individual person, have their own separate 2-3-story quest line. So there wasn't really anything that cohesive that brought it together was the problem for me.
Do you think maybe it's quite difficult to have a storyline on a similar level to that of the other Far Cry ones? Because, I mean, most of people's lives back, you know, in the Stone Age was more about survival, and it might have been less about, like, oh, they kidnapped my daughter or whatever.
For sure. I think definitely is probably the most challenging thing about writing the story then. But one thing I will say, Ubisoft, they always do their homework. They stick to the history books. They do their research. So, like, even the whole dialogue for the game is in this ancient language. I can't remember what it's called right now off the top of my head.
Masbrashtar. Weenja.
But they took this actual language and they just sort of tweaked it so we understand it. Because otherwise, you know, there was no grammar or anything like that back then when it came to communication. So they fixed that. Even that, you know, that whole survival aspect, the way they did touch on it was good. I just wish they would have fleshed it out and dug deeper into the characters. There are certain characters I really liked, and I wanted to see more of that character.
The setting was definitely going to be something we'd touch on because it was such a big part of the game. But you think they did a good job on getting all of that right?
Oh, for sure. The environment is amazing. It's got very luscious forests. The mountains are just, you know, extremely dangerous. They're freezing cold, so you have to be careful when you're in that biome. The world is split into, I want to say, 4 or 5 different biomes. So depending on where you're at, you get different kind of wildlife, different kind of scenery. I'm going to go back and back to it. The beast taming and just the animals in the game are by far the best thing. I mean, watching a saber-toothed tiger jump on to like a mammoth's neck and just pierce its tusks into its throat and just holding on for dear life was just amazing to watch, because you imagine that's literally how it would have tried to take down prey bigger than itself. They also have like leopards, jaguars, lions. My first personal favorite, the honey badger, is there.
Okay.
The honey badger literally bears every other animal. Just like the whole meme and the video and everything. Like, you bring up the honey badger, bears run away from it. It's ridiculous.
I know another thing that I kind of didn't even think about until I read about it was, you know, you have to craft all of your weapons as well, which of course you'd have to do if you were in the actual Stone Age.
It is very resource driven. So unlike, you know, previous Far Cries where, you know, hey, I kill people, let me just go run by their bodies, pick up their ammo. Or let me go to a safe house and just pick up ammo or, you know, whatever. That's not the case in Far Cry Primal. You don't have any, you know, airplanes coming in crates of supplies for you or anything like that. I can't tell you how many times I've run out of arrows and had to, like, fight to go and run, pick up wood so I can start crafting more arrows and go back into the fight. I'm like, okay, Sabretooth, you go fight now. I'm going to go grab some stuff and I'll be right back.
We see things like, you know, Assassin's Creed, they go a bit into the past, but with Far Cry Primal, they've gone the furthest back they can. And I think this is something that I'd like to see more of, because, you know, if you're talking survival, this is the ultimate survival, really.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're going to plan one with dinosaurs next and, like, just go further back, because that would be cool. Like, I would totally down be hunting some, you know, raptors and T-Rexes and be able to tame those. But I like Far Cry Primal. I put it up there towards the top of the list for the Far Cry games, for sure.
Even without the massive storylines.
I think what they did is they're trying to open up their player base a little bit more. It's more shifted towards that sandbox style now. So maybe the more Grand Theft Auto or Saints Row players that really don't touch the story too much. They just go around and kill things or people or whatever. It's a little more accessible to them because I don't feel like they have to do a storyline. Mm. A majority of the stuff in the game you can get without touching the story. And then you'll hit certain walls where it's like, you have to do this story to unlock this trait or ability. But like I said, the storyline is so simple and it's always along the way. It's just kind of there and it's convenient to do. The map is huge. That's one thing I will say. The overworld is just massive. I spent about 6 hours yesterday replaying it, and I probably covered maybe a third of the map in that 6 hours. So there's tons of room to explore, and they did a really good job filling it in. And it doesn't feel like you're ever like, oh, I have so far to get to here and there. There's plenty of fast travel locations, so you can jump around as instantly.
And now it's time for this week's gaming news. The second beta for the upcoming Hitman game will be exclusive to PlayStation Plus subscribers, Square Enix have announced. It is scheduled to begin on March the 4th and will only be available over the weekend until March the 6th. The beta features a prologue set in a secret ICA training facility and introduces Agent 47, the ICA, and Diana Burnwood. Rocket League will be coming to retail stores later this year. The news was announced by Sonic Studios Vice President Jeremy Dunham, who said, "We're going to be announcing very soon that Rocket League's coming to retail. We're going to be talking about who our partner is, when you can expect to see it, and what comes in that package." Nintendo should take a gamble on movies like Marvel did, at least according to one Hollywood executive. Adrian Ascare, who is chief executive of Prime Universe Films and working on a movie version of Deus Ex, said that it would be a mistake if Nintendo didn't take advantage of the popularity of its franchise, and compared the risk and reward experienced by Marvel. Now for the sport. CounterLogic Gaming has acquired Michael Schwartz as their player development coach. According to a press release from the team, Schwartz has already been with them for a couple of weeks, making sure to improve the quality of life for the players. A video was also released in conjunction with the announcement, where Schwartz himself says he will set up sleep schedules, physical training, and mental activities, among other things, for the CLG players. The Chiefs will not be attending the MLG Major Championships Columbus Qualifier as they are unable to secure a visa in time. The next team in line are Splice, who placed second at the Americas Minor Championships, and will be attending in the spot belonging to the Mongols, who also encountered visa issues. Eric Adrian Hogue will start for Team Liquid at the MLG CSGO Major Championship Columbus Offline Qualifier, the player announced on Twitter on Tuesday. Adrian was initially benched due to poor performance in recent games and was briefly replaced by Kenneth Kuster-Shawn in TL's roster, but Kuster will be playing for his former team, Enemy, at the qualifier due to roster lock-in rules. Whether it's quirky survival games like Don't Starve, emotionally charged stories like Gone Home, or extreme unimaginable horror like in Outlast, you can pretty much find a game for anything when it comes to the world of indie games. But why are they so popular? In his new book, Indie Games: The Complete Introduction to Indie Gaming, Vice editor Mike Diver explored behind the scenes of this incredible movement, and he sat down with me to tell me all about it.
My book is quite literally an introduction to indie games. That's the title of said book. And it is that. It is an introduction to indie games as seen through the eyes and decaying brain of someone who is himself kind of fascinated by the possibilities of the gaming medium in general, but also how these independent producers are moving it forward in their own unique ways and kind of creating not like a small cottage industry side of the bigger industry, but, you know, the worlds of their own that exist outside of the corporate machine, if you will. Hopefully it's going to reach people who do love their Call of Duties and their Far Cries and Fallouts, etc. Nothing wrong with those games at all.
Would you say, though, that a lot of the time people are kind of into both these days? Because I play a lot of Fallout, but then I also play a lot of indie games as well.
Yeah,
so
I think if you know games and you're into games, like, quite a lot, and you follow the scene a bit and read a bit of the gaming press, then the division isn't that obvious to you. You know, if gaming to you is what's on the shelves of Tesco Metro this week, then you've no idea what Fez ever was. You've no idea what Firewatch is, for instance. A lot of people I've spoken to, both for the book and not for the book, are, you know, of the opinion that, you know, indie game, AAA game, it doesn't matter so much anymore. But that division still is there when you consider the scale of the projects and sometimes the themes they're tackling. You know, EA are not going to do a game about a kid dying of cancer. An indie game can do that if they choose to do that, you know.
Do you know how they celebrate off treatment day, like when kids are done with their treatments? I guess maybe you don't because you're not in the clinic as much as I am, but on someone's last day, they always bring them a cake and they sing happy off therapy day to you.
Indie games can be really mainstream. We'll see it this summer with No Man's Sky. That's got to be big, I think, for the amount of time that's gone into it and what Sony have, how they've positioned it as kind of like one of their real lead projects. But you can go super low down to, like, you know, a team of two people making a game, you know, someone on their own making a video game, and that's still an indie game. That's, you know, I guess the bracket, if you will, around indie games is actually a lot wider than surround the AAA mainstream gaming. You know, indie games is actually a much, much bigger scene, even though it's thought of as being a smaller part of the gaming industry.
Well, a lot of people who aren't really into games at all are surprised when you say Minecraft is an indie game, because they're like, but it's so big.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just a great idea that, you know, became a multi-billion dollar success story and bought its maker a house in the Hollywood Hills. I mean, it's insane, isn't it?
I think it just proves to the larger publishers that you don't have to put all the money in the world behind it to create something that people love.
I mean, that's why, in a slightly different sense of that, that's why Minecraft is so important, because it's a massive game that looks like shit. It ducks out of the whole graphical arms race, for want of a better expression. You know, it's not about being photoreal, like something like, you know, Sony's The Order last year was, The Order 1886, which is like, oh my God, look at those mustaches, they're amazing. Yeah, but the game just plays like any other game, right? Minecraft is a world of creativity, and it just looks like some kid scribbling on his existing Lego brick with crayon everywhere. I mean, it looks like garbage, but it plays amazing. Like, and the possibility in that game is incredible.
Let's go to a place where everything is made of blocks. Where the only limit is your imagination. Let's go wherever you want to go. Climb the tallest mountains. Venture down to the darkest caves. Let's go back to being kids again. Build anything you want. Day or night, rain or shine, because this is the most significant sandbox you'll ever set foot in. Seek refuge as you build a small shelter.
Who are some of the people that you spoke to for your book?
There is Dan Pinchbeck from The Chinese Room, who did Dear Esther and Everybody's Gone to the Rapture and the second Amnesia game. Sean Murray from Hello Games. David Braben, who did Elite back in the day, Elite Dangerous Now. Tim Schafer's in there, who founded Double Fine. He used to be at LucasArts, was a major player on the second Secret Monkey Island game and has since gone on to make Broken Age, which was a massive Kickstarter success. I think one of the biggest, or if not at the time, the biggest Kickstarter success. But there's a few journalists in there, like Simon Parkin's in there, who's written a great book himself. Lee Alexander's in there. I spoke to some studios in Sweden, Denaton, who make Hotline Miami, and Simogo, who are a great mobile developer. Well, traditionally a mobile developer. They're not exclusively mobile, but they made Device 6 and Yearwalk and Beat Sneak Bandit and a load of amazing mobile games, just really inventive, that actually used the platform properly. You know, they didn't need like horrible virtual joysticks or anything. They understood the medium really well. It's kind of divided up into a number of essays that have contributions from the people I've interviewed in them, but they're sort of semi-features, semi-opinion pieces, again, on where I think indie games may or may not be going. And for instance, the like indie games like Amnesia, Slender, stuff like that, you can look at those horror indie games that YouTube has made very popular and look at what Alien Isolation did, which is a big Sega-published game. And it's just taking cues from those games, totally.
And that was something I was going to touch on as well, kind of what you think the bigger publishers could learn from the smaller indie games.
We're kind of, well, maybe we're seeing it with, you know, you've got this year, you've got Assassin's Creed taking the year off, so that's Ubisoft saying, we're not going to do that. But you've got EA putting their money behind Unravel, which is effectively, you know, a side-scrolling puzzle platformer. You know, you can see that EA have looked at the popularity of a title like Limbo and those smaller experiences and gone, well, you know, we don't have to throw all the money in the world at this. We just need to be supportive and make sure this game gets made. And, I mean, Sony have done that with projects. I mean, Firewatch, you know, it's a console exclusive to Sony and they've backed that. The bigger studios are just starting to break out of the monotony of repackaging something they've done before. Even Call of Duty is a bit different with the last iteration, the Black Ops 3. You know, Far Cry Primal, the new Far Cry, well, that's, you've not got guns now. You know, it's gone Stone Age. It's a little bit more survival-based and a little bit less kill everyone. You know, I don't think you would look back at, like, you know, Prehistoric Man and think, how can we make this so it's not all guns and violence, unless you had maybe the indie sector doing strange survival games themselves. Yeah.
That's it for this week. You can find out more about Jada on her Twitch page, twitch.tv/jadarena, and read her review of Far Cry Primal on nerdreactor.com. She's also a regular on the Video Game Bang podcast, so be sure to check that out on their channel right here on Audioboom. And if you want to get your hands on Mike's book, it's available on Amazon for both physical and Kindle copies from March the 25th. Join me next week for more indie gaming fun as I introduce my producer, Jamie, to Goat Simulator.